Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I've been away for a couple weeks. I hope somebody out there noticed. I was largely disconnected from the news for lack of internet access. Still, I heard about the toxic algae in Lake Erie that forced officials in Northwest Ohio to turn off the taps last week. And I also got wind of the controversies swirling around Democratic gubernatorial candidate Ed Fitzgerald. Now, I expect to be fully briefed by my guest today for the Weekly Reporter Roundtable, Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Welcome back from your vacation, by the way.
That's right. I'll be briefing everyone, I'm sure. Yes.
And Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome to the show, Joe.
And I have not had a vacation.
Joe needs a vacation.
And I also double-checked with our next guest joining us by phone, Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News. Laura, you've been hard at work as well, I hope.
Yes, writing lots of stories.
Okay. Well, let's start with the governor's race. Incumbent Republican John Kasich still enjoys a huge lead in fundraising and a double-digit lead in the polls over Democratic challenger Ed Fitzgerald, who has had some troubles in recent weeks. First, with the reports that 2 years ago, police found him with a woman who was not his wife in a parked car at 4:30 a.m. Second, with reports that he had been driving for about a decade without a regular driver's license. About 3 months remain before Election Day. Could anything else go wrong, or could anything else go right for Ed Fitzgerald, Joe Ingles?
Well, hey, it's name recognition, right?
Yeah, it's a very good point.
I don't know.
You can't buy that.
I was noticing last week here in the Columbus market, of course, the Ed Fitzgerald story was big news to me because I cover politics. Mm-hmm. So my world is somewhat jaded when it comes to news because the things I cover, I think, are important. So I would go home at night and watch the local news. And daggone, I hardly saw anything about Ed Fitzgerald. Saw a lot about the OSU band, but saw very little about Ed Fitzgerald's problems. Even in the newspaper. That story was largely buried in comparison to other stories. So,
Laura Bischoff, is this a luck of timing? In other words, all is eclipsed by the best damn band in the land drama?
No, I kind of disagree with Joe. I think this has been making a lot of political hay for the Republicans. I think the band story has still got some legs to it and has been going on, and there's keen interest in that. But at the same time, I really think that the Fitzgerald campaign is in deep trouble, and there has been some just an inordinate amount of time and attention on this these episodes of the no driver's license and the 4:30 in the morning traffic stop.
Oh, I agree. Let me be clear. I agree that the Fitzgerald campaign is in deep trouble. I just don't think it's necessarily because of these stories. I think that they were in trouble to begin with. And the biggest problem they have right now is that the solid Democrats who were behind them, some of them are falling off. If you look at local comments on the different stories, you'll see people who were tried and true Democrats saying, I don't like them. And you'll see, the fundraising certainly has not been there that Kasich has had. So I agree he's in trouble. I just don't necessarily think that it was necessarily due to this story.
Well, he's got a lot of he's way outmatched on the fundraising front. He's behind by 12 points. The latest Quinnipiac poll showed that 65% of Ohio voters don't know enough about him to have an opinion, including 55% in his own backyard. So he's got a lot, like you said, he's got a lot of problems going in. And then, so he's somewhat of a clean slate. He can kind of mold mm-hmm. his own image. And he's been campaigning on his image as like this, I'm going to clean up corruption. I'm a former FBI agent, the Boy Scout reputation. And then this has tarnished those credentials. So it's sort of, it's just like another big hit to the campaign. And he can't, without the money, he can't then try to reshape and change the narrative on him.
You're listening to the Weekly Reporters Roundtable on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, what do you make of the Ed Fitzgerald campaign at this point? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Chrissy Thompson.
Yeah, I just piggybacking on what Laura was saying, I think the issue is that Fitzgerald's campaign was already in a hole and people already didn't know who he was. Right. And they already needed to run a perfect campaign relying largely on the Democratic base, unions, teachers, in some ways environmentalists, things like that, to shore up their try to get turnout, people to come out to vote that maybe wouldn't be showing in the polls, right? And this just kind of, it just takes all the wind out of any sails that they had. It just deflates that effort.
He was doing, I don't know what he's doing now, but in the polls, he was doing pretty well with women. These kinds of issues, do they affect that demographic at all, Joe?
He wasn't way ahead with women.
No, not way ahead,
yeah.
But
you know, yeah.
Better than.
I don't know. We
Kasich.
Haven't seen a poll since then.
Exactly.
So it's really hard to know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that the key thing here is, you know, people could, the way it came out and the way that it was strung along for a week, instead of being up front with it, that seemed to have angered people. If you look at the comments that people are making in the paper and again on radio shows, for example, Karen Kassler, my colleague, was on a radio show, a TV show in Cleveland Friday. And the comments from a lot of Democrats in the, you know, Cleveland, if you don't have Cleveland and you're a Democrat, then you got a problem. And the Democrats who were calling in were saying, hey, you know, we're really disgusted. We don't like this. We had no idea all this was going on. But this really makes us not want to vote for him, not vote at all. And I think that's the key thing. It's taken people from maybe a point of where they may not have known much about him and may have been inclined to vote for him, and now they're just like, no, I don't want him. And they don't like Kasich either, though, if you listen
right.
to him.
So what the problem is going to be then voter turnout.
Right.
I think so.
Getting back to what you were saying, Chrissy.
Right. There are plenty of people who don't like Kasich, and if he could get if Fitzgerald could get those people on his team, he would have a really good shot in this election. But the problem is if you're a Democrat and you're sitting on the sidelines trying to decide whether you want to get involved in this campaign, why would you? Mm-hmm. Things are falling apart. This is just not the year for them.
Well,
and
Laura Bischoff falling apart arguably from a thin veneer of a campaign to begin with, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Fitzgerald campaign didn't exactly start off on the right foot. Remember that he had named Eric Kearney as his running mate, mm-hmm. and either didn't know or brushed aside reports that the Kearneys, Eric and his wife, owed several hundred thousand dollars in back taxes and penalties linked to their media business. And so he kept Kearney on, even though they were getting hammered in the press over that. And then Kearney stepped off the ticket, and then he appointed Sharon Neuhart, who's a corporate attorney from Yellow Springs. And so, you know, that was sort of a bad way to start the campaign, and then his fundraising has been very lackluster, and he just, you know, he's just not known yet. And it's, how many days, like 86 days till the election?
Yep. Joe Ingles, this is all given John Kasich the further luxury of how, you know, focusing on the issues, I guess. How has the Kasich campaign responded to these blunders
silently, very silently,
which is a luxury,
right? You know,
how wonderful is that to not have to,
right? I haven't had a comment from them about the Ed Fitzgerald blunders in a week, not one. Now they've commented on other things,
yeah,
okay, but not that.
They certainly want coverage of this, but but you know, to be able to run, they haven't had to run a negative ad,
yeah.
You know, I mean.
Why would they? They don't have to. They've got the, you know, the GOP is doing it for them. They have the RNC. And
so has Governor Kasich focused on the issues in his campaigning then? What has he been doing? He's been raising money.
Yeah, he's been raising money. And he's out, you know, if you look at his schedule, he's out in public events everywhere around the state. And he's just doing what he'd do as governor. And, of course, you know, he'll put maybe a little political bit on it here and there. But, you know, he's just doing basically his job and going about his business. And meanwhile, Ed Fitzgerald is, you know, basically holding news conferences. Yesterday, I got a media release from Ed Fitzgerald, and the subject line said, an apology and algae. And I thought, wow, what a weird headline for it. And it was basically yet another apology. And then, oh, let's talk about the toxic, you know, water. So he's been doing that for a week now. Okay. He's apologized for a week.
And he is holding some sort of a summit this afternoon up in Cuyahoga County on the harmful algae blooms in Lake Erie. So I think he's trying to shift the discussion back to the issues, and he's trying to show some leadership on a really important issue right now.
Yeah, the algae could be a great issue for him.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans that control the Ohio General Assembly have not worked very hard to change the conditions that lead to these algae blooms.
Yeah, the algae blooms are it's been a problem in Lake Erie for I think 18 or 19 years.
Yeah, since the mid 90s.
Yeah, it's been getting worse, and of course with climate change that has led to stronger, more intense spring storms. That leads to more runoff, which leads to more harmful algae blooms. A little bit warmer lake temperatures also are prime conditions for more algae blooms. So this is a problem that's been kind of building, not just in the Kasich administration, but the prior administrations
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
And something, you know, I think that maybe this this incident up in Toledo is going to be a big wake-up call to perhaps change how they do business.
Yeah, this is an opportunity really for if Fitzgerald can get the campaign refocused to point to Kasich and say you know Kasich claims to be an environmentalist and is rather moderate and environmentally friendly on some issues. He has a decent environmental record, but environmentalists say, you know, not enough, right? They point to all sorts of things. So if you could focus the campaign on that and really demand answers and force Kasich to change or something like that, that could be something that would work. But I just really think I see Kasich, when you say is he focusing on the issues, I think the thesis of his campaign is, are you happier than you were 4 years ago? He doesn't talk a lot about lists of issues, right? And mm-hmm. on this, I believe this, and on this, mm-hmm. I believe this. He's just said, well, you've seen me be governor. Are you okay with this? I think the state is doing better, and these are the things we're still working on. But mm-hmm. It's not. So for instance, if you were able to if the algae bloom issue becomes very big, that would pull him, I think, Kasich a little bit out of his comfort zone, and would require some action from him. Or
I want to talk more about the algae bloom, more about the water crisis in Toledo in just a minute. For now, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests, Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Enquirer, Joe Engels of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, and by phone, Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News. If you have a question or comment about state government politics, we're also going to be talking about the Ohio State Marching Band later on. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's go back to the Lake Erie issue. I want to understand why this was such an impact on northern Ohio and why it hasn't affected other states, for example. Are those the only areas that pull water from it for drinking or what? Can anyone talk about that?
No, well, go ahead.
Okay. From what I understand, and Laura, you can correct me if you know, but it's the way that it's worked, the way the watershed works,
okay,
and the way the water flows. When you look at where the Toledo area is, mm-hmm. it would get the brunt of the impact because of where the water comes from and the way the water flows. That would be the major difference.
Yeah, well, the you know, the Maumee River watershed runs through a lot of big farmland. There's a lot of runoff, and it goes into Lake Erie and the Western Basin there. And I think also, isn't the Western Basin kind of the most shallow point in the lake?
Yes,
one of them. So all of that kind of contributes to it. And it's, you know, I guess also Toledo's water intake for their main plant there is right near the big blob of algae.
Right.
So that was part of the problem. And then the Ohio EPA was kind of pointing fingers at Toledo water treatment officials, saying that they had warned them that their equipment wasn't up to snuff, and that they were running a risk of having big failures. I talked to a guy who runs the Ottawa County water system, and he said also that there's no good standards for testing for this these microcystins. I think I'm saying that right.
Right.
And so it's very difficult to figure out like what concoction of chemicals and treatments and procedures will take this stuff out of the water. I think there's a lot of work to be done, both on the side of stopping or mitigating the runoff that's contributing to the bloom, and then also, you know, when the water is withdrawn from the lake and put through treatment the plants, you know, how to make sure that if there is this harmful stuff, that they can most efficiently and effectively take it out.
So how did, Joe Ingles, how did the Kasich administration, the state, respond to this?
Well, they went up there right away, and they started working on it. It was curious to me because within 2 days, they said, oh, the water's safe to drink.
Mm-hmm.
However, I've got to admit, if I lived in Toledo, I'd still be drinking
bottled
water.
They're saying it wasn't even safe to bathe in.
Yeah, it wasn't. You know, you go from not being safe to bathe in, and, you know, and then when you'd ask for the, I didn't ask personally for the records, but I saw other reporters asking for the records from the local water treatment supply and different areas to try to figure out how they rectified this so quickly. And I never saw one single story that had those records, could attribute it. It was very odd because it was kind of like, oh, it's really, really dangerous. Don't drink it. Don't bathe in it. Don't do anything with it. And then 2 days later, no, it's okay. Go ahead.
Never mind. People up in Michigan were saying it was a hoax and that it was just a way for FEMA or, you know, emergency management organizations to figure out how to handle something like that, which is kind of absurd on its face. But, Laura, what did we learn about how the state handled it? What happens when 500,000 people all of a sudden don't have enough water?
This is a big, big problem. I mean, mm-hmm. We live in the United States, not some third world country.
We live
where
in
clean
the
drinking water is not,
right,
you know, a given. And I am with Joe. We drove through Toledo on Monday, and we specifically did not stop for lunch until we were through those counties, because it was like, all right, they lifted the drinking ban, but it's just too soon for me. I don't know how they managed to say that everything's okie dokie just a couple days after there was all these dire warnings.
And if you looked at the water that was taken from there, they had some pictures of the water that was taken from that basin on that end.
Yeah.
It was green. It looked like a green smoothie or something. Yeah, it was really bizarre.
Is this a wake-up call to the legislature now? Do you think they are going to take steps? Is this, or is this just another, you know, mass killing that has no impact on handgun laws in the United States? It's going to go by the wayside.
It depends on where the money is. I mean, if you look at it right now, the reason that the legislature doesn't really go after some of these things that environmentalists would like to see them do, the reason that isn't done is because there's a whole lot of money in big ag.
Right. But you just said environmentalists. What happens when it's, you know, for lack of, you know, your proverbial Joe Sixpack who can't drink the water?
Yeah, and Joe Sixpack, if they're, you know, if they're active in the legislature and they're, you know, giving money, and there's someone who represents them that's giving money that says, hey, you know, we want this fixed. I mean, The one thing that you can always count on at the State House is there's a money trail behind everything. And it pretty much tells the story almost 95% of the time. And maybe I'm jaded as a reporter, but, hey, I feel like
second
that.
Second time you've used that term. and just this hour. Chrissy Thompson?
I told you Joe needs a vacation. No.
Feeling all fresh and less jaded right now?
Well, I would tend to agree with Joe on some level. I think that's why we haven't seen any action right now. It's very difficult for Democrats or Republicans to oppose agriculture, mm-hmm. The agriculture lobby. I do think, though, there are some very, we have some powerful people from both parties in the legislature who are from that area. And if this were, I think it probably has to happen again. If this becomes an ongoing problem, for them to say, They would have to stand up and say.
You mean ongoing problem as in if repeatedly a half
correct.
A million people go without water.
Right. I think that one time is probably not enough.
Right.
I'm just my gut. Right. Mm. So if this were to happen again and they can't drink the water, bathe in the water, especially I think that the bathing thing takes it to a new level. Right. If you can't wash your hands when you go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I was just telling Joe, I went backpacking last week and I'm just envisioning, you know, using wet wipes for days like I did on the trail, you know. I think that takes it to another level. And I think that the lawmakers would then at least start taking steps. But then the question becomes, are they actually doing something that's going to make mm-hmm. a meaningful impact, or are they just passing laws that
window dressing.
Look
well,
like
never
they're
done
making
that
an
before.
Impact. Right.
Laura Bischoff, what do you make of it? One of the issues is that this is somewhat of a seasonal problem. Heat, you know, plays a role in this. It usually happens in the summer.
Right.
I don't know about it happening in the winter or fall or spring very often. So what do you think about? Is there a will in the Ohio General Assembly?
I kind of agree with Chrissy. I think it's going to have to happen one or two more times before people turn out on the State House lawn with, you know, torches and pitchforks demanding
right.
action. I think that the harmful algae bloom window or season is actually a lot longer than you think. It's like from May to October.
Okay.
It's not even expected to peak until September. That's because, you know, the lakes heat up over the summer. They get a lot, they're rather brusque when you go in early June, but by the end of August, they're fairly warm. So I think that this is a big problem. I think that if the algae bloom were to affect a bigger area, like not that Toledo's not important and that 500,000 people isn't a lot, but imagine if it were to spread east and were to affect Cleveland's drinking water. I mean, then you're talking about, you know, maybe half of the state's population would be seriously inconvenienced and put in danger by not having access to safe drinking and bathing water.
Yeah.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is our weekly reporters roundtable today. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There's one of my pregnant pauses there. engage people so often. Is this just an Ohio thing? Is there someplace it's happening elsewhere? Is that why, Chrissy Thompson, you said it's hard to figure out what to do about it? And who knows if they pass some laws, what they'll actually be doing about it? What can we do about it? My sense is, from the agricultural community, when I've talked to representatives therein, they know there's a problem, too. They have no vested interest in not getting something done. So what is it that the legislature would do anyway?
Well, I couldn't see the farm community, for example, saying, OK, we're going to go with a no phosphorus kind of deal. You know, I don't think that would happen. But that would be something that would be a game changer, because that is causing a lot of problems. Some of the known remedies for this are very popular with farmers. There's the, you know, some people will say no-till farming might help. But then other experts say that really even even exacerbates the problem.
Because it keeps the phosphorus above ground.
Right.
And then
it flows faster.
Right.
So, the real answer, it's hard to tell what it would be. But as far as the farmers wanting to participate, I think they might do some things. But some of the things that we know that everyone already knows could help, I don't think we're going to find a lot of support for those.
There are some things that we can do that municipalities and the state could make regulations for, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, related to sewage treatment and things like that. I don't know if we in the U.S. do enjoy the luxury of being able to, drink the same water that we bathe with and water our grass with, which is very unusual throughout the world. But I don't think we realize how much we still send untreated sewage into our waterways. So there are some. Now, I don't know if that would make a big enough impact to change the whole situation if we just change some regulations on that level. But those are some things we could do also.
Grand Lake St. Mary's had a big, huge, harmful algae bloom problem.
To the west of us, yeah.
Right, and I think that's right near Salina. And in 2011, the state declared the watershed in distress, which then allowed for tougher restrictions on farming and fertilizer application. And so some of the Democrats from the Toledo area are trying to ask that the state declare the Maumee watershed also in distress, which would trigger these stricter restrictions. And Ann, you had asked whether or not these blooms are happening elsewhere. Chesapeake Bay over in the Maryland area, they've had a big problem with this. There have been big algae blooms in the Gulf of Mexico. In the Chesapeake Bay area, farmers have built streamside buffers and manure pits and to try to keep the phosphorus from reaching the waterways. And they're doing more soil testing. But it's still a problem there. And, I think Ohio is going to have to do something with ag to make it so that there's less runoff. And I think this is going to come down to a battle between big ag and, the travel and tourism industry up along the lake is got to be very concerned about this. I mean, Cedar Point.
They had to have taken a hit.
They cannot. I don't think they were in the no drinking
area.
I think they're in Ottawa County, but they got to be worried.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, I don't know how many people they draw to their park every day, but it's got to be 100,000 or so. They're not going to be able to operate if they had a no drinking. If they had a no drinking, no use order. Mm-hmm. So,
Sunny in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Sunny.
Hi. I used to live in Oregon, Ohio, in Lucas County, and my sister, who lives in Oregon, she was glad that the National Guard brought water to them so they could cook and bathe. And she also uses Maumee State Park to swim, and that was all messed up with that stuff, too. And that's my comments.
All right. Is she satisfied with how they managed the problem?
Yes, because if it wasn't for the National Guard, people wouldn't have been able to bathe, and eventually that would cause health problems because people with children and grandchildren, especially grandchildren, they needed water to change their Pampers and stuff like that.
Okay.
It was the National Guard done a good job, and she was glad for that, and I hope they fix Maumee Bay because I swim there too.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sunny, for your call. Okay, another Northern Ohio issue, I suppose, in a way. I remember Rick Hodges from the 90s when he represented a Northern Ohio district in the Ohio House. He wasn't a doctor or a health care professional then, and he isn't now. Yet the governor has appointed him the state health director. What do we know about what went into this decision, Joe Ingles?
Well, the state health director traditionally has been a doctor. It has been someone with a lot of knowledge. But there have been changes at the state health department level as far as what they do with abortion clinics. And that's where we're really seeing a lot of this opposition to this idea come about, because the state health director now has way more, because of recently passed laws, has way more ability to shut down an abortion clinic. And in fact, we've seen one that has been shut down. We've got another one that's running on, you know, fumes right now. They're trying to stay open. And the state health director has been instrumental in shutting those down. So that's why we're hearing all these complaints about Rick Hodges isn't a doctor. He's, you know, should have more skills in this area to have.
Why would a doctor make any difference?
Because the way that they can shut down these clinics is to say that medically they're not serving people properly. Well, you know, if to make that judgment, I think a lot of people who are complaining about this say you have to be a doctor to know what medically is necessary, what medically is good, and that sort of thing. And that seems to be the crux of the issue here. But if you look at the actual medical board, in the last couple of years, we've seen people appointed to it who are not, you know, not medical doctors. And they are, for example, Mike Gonadakis, the president of Ohio Right to Life, sits mm-hmm. on that board. So there is some suspicion from the pro-choice, the abortion providers, that the reason that they're putting these people in place like this and not having medical doctors is because they have an agenda behind it.
There's a lot more that the health department does. And at the very least, I think it was from the 90s, one of the health directors back then at least ran the Medicaid system in Ohio and was familiar with that aspect of healthcare and healthcare providing. Just beyond the abortion issue, Chrissy Thompson, any thoughts about Rick Hodges and what this means?
Yeah, I think the argument is that he has dealt with other areas that overlap with health.
Yeah, I read his resume and I still don't get it.
Yes, it's not super overt. There's some workers' compensation health stuff, and he was a marketer for a health-related organization. Mm-hmm. It's tough. The interim director that they've had for quite some time has, before working for the health department as its general counsel, was an environmental attorney from Cincinnati. So he didn't have any health-related experience, really, either, besides before he worked for the health department. So, you know, the health department does overlap with all sorts of other areas throughout the state besides abortion clinics, right? Mm-hmm. The reason that it weighs in on these abortion clinics is that it oversees regulations and inspections and licensing for any health facility in the state. So outpatient surgery centers, LASIK, you know, hospitals, obviously. It also is the defendant in one of the gay marriage cases because it, I think that's related to
the birth certificate.
It's either birth or death certificates.
Oh, okay.
I honestly cannot remember which either. One. And there's all sorts of other regulations and outreach. They do a whole lot related to infectious disease and flu shots and all sorts of things like that. So it's public health, but it's medically related. And Ohio, without having a doctor, is one of, I think now, four states in the country that doesn't have a doctor as the director of health. So there are other issues that this person, that Mr. Hodges, will be dealing with. Now the health department has quite a bit of staff that work there throughout and actually run the licensing and work there even when the administrations change over. But we've seen with these abortion clinics that the health department director can override some of those recommendations. So it just, you could make an argument either way, I think, it's worth looking at and saying, is this a concern? And asking questions about why we don't have a doctor, I think.
If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. Joining us on by phone, Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, Joe Engels of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Okay, so briefly, I wanted to, because there isn't a lot to say about the other statewide elective offices and the races there for those offices, but there is a little bit of a brouhaha in the Attorney General's office with Mike DeWine and their probe into or lack thereof of sexual harassment in the office. Laura Bischoff, what's going on there?
So there was a woman who was an intern named Amy Garrison, and she was kind of an outstanding employee. And they, when she finished law school, they offered her a job as an assistant attorney general. And she initially accepted, and then she declined. And she told her supervisor she was declining because she wasn't comfortable that she had had some sort of harassment or an uncomfortable situation or relationship of some sort with a man who was older and who was close to the attorney general. So this set off all kinds of alarm bells, and the top administrators within DeWine's office started asking a lot of questions and investigating, and the woman changed her story and became very uncooperative and refused to name who this man was or what kind of harassment happened. And they referred it to Ron O'Brien's office, the Franklin County prosecutor, for investigation, and he decided nothing criminal had occurred, and the woman took a job. She passed the bar and took a job as a lawyer, I think in the Cleveland area. Mm-hmm. And that was that. Now, during this investigation, though, they did take statements from a number of top officials in DeWine's administration and from Mike DeWine. And there was a little bit of an oddity in that Mike DeWine had insisted on getting the name of the confidential informant from the Equal Opportunity Compliance Officer who was conducting the investigation?
Yeah, that's right.
And that was a little bit odd. And there was no follow-up on what he did with this information, if he talked to the informant or what have you. And we still don't know who this alleged harasser was. The attorney for the woman said that there was no harassment, there was no uncomfortable situation, she's not filing a complaint, she'd never filed a complaint, and everything got blown out of proportion. So this was a story that was kind of, I had taken a look at it, and I decided not to write about it. It just didn't seem that strong. The Sandusky Register, though, I think last week wrote a story about it, and now the Democrats are trying to gin up more information or more interest in the story, and I think the Ohio Democratic Party Chairman Redfern is holding a press conference on it today, this morning, probably right now as we speak.
Yeah, what Laura said, that's exactly it, and that's we haven't done anything at public radio about it, primarily for the same reason Laura just stated.
Yeah, I first heard about the situation 9 months ago, I suppose, and spent on and off quite a bit of time looking into it. Because if there is someone who's committed sexual harassment in the Attorney General's office and they haven't been able for lack of skill, say they handled it wrongly or maybe they just weren't able to figure it out, we need to be concerned about that. We as taxpayers are paying that person. But I spent quite a bit of time looking into all sorts of different angles related to the case. Never did a story, and I really don't. A lot of my interviews that I did with people weren't on the record, so I can't give a whole lot of detail, but I don't believe that there's a story there. And I did interview Mike DeWine about the situation. I had decided the day before that I probably didn't think it was a story, but I'd already lined up the interview. And so I have, I know quite a bit about what he says is his rationale for a lot of the stuff that happened. For instance, the confidential informant situation. He says that that was the very end of the interview process, where the Equal Opportunity Compliance Officer was interviewing a lot of different people, and that he thought, this is basically, we're going to have to put this to bed, and we don't know if there was ever sexual harassment, so I should try to get more information out of this confidential informant. And he says that he talked to the person and couldn't get any more information out of them either, and is frustrated with the whole situation, you know. And I also talked to some sexual harassment, one in particular expert, who said that, you know, that asking for the name, it's an okay thing to do if you're trying to bring the investigation to a conclusion more quickly, right? It just depends on how you talk to that person, right? You don't want to be intimidating them, and we're unable to say one way or another whether that happened. But on its face, that's not an incorrect practice necessarily.
Okay. Just turning back briefly, Mary and Dayton, you wanted to talk about the appointment of Rick Hodges to head the Ohio Department of Health. You're a public health professor at Wright State. Is that correct?
Yes, public health education, actually.
Okay. And what do you think of this appointment?
Well, I would just like to encourage reporters to keep digging into this and keep your ear to the ground, and please let us know as things develop, because I can just speak for myself that I'm extremely concerned about this. Ohio is not always known as very progressive in public health, and the Ohio Department of Health is extremely important in that they are the kind of the leaders, and they give guidelines funding to all the county health departments who serve a lot of people, doing a lot of great preventive immunization, smoking cessation, birth certificates. They play a really vital role, and we need someone at the top who has not only the medical knowledge, you know, to do all the regulations of the facilities, but also the public health. So, you know, this person really has neither that I can see. And I know that the secondhand person came from Medicare, right, from Medicaid, so that's good. But again, we need a leader that we can go to and say things like, oh my gosh, do you realize what's happening with vector-borne disease right now? You know, the funding was cut, and we need them to be able to understand why that's important.
And you don't want them saying, hey, talk to my vector-borne disease guy. They'll take care of it for you. Okay.
He needs to have a basic understanding. Mm-hmm. Another thing that's really frustrating about our state is we don't have health education standards with all of our, the Ohio Department of Education. We are the only state that has no health education standards for districts to follow. And so if you don't understand the basics of prevention and how important it is to start at a young age, you know, going to our leader and saying, hey, what can you do to help us with this? He's not going to really get it. You know, and I guess I should give him a chance.
Well, it sounds in defense, I mean, there have been doctors in charge for years, and they didn't see the need for the standards that you speak of either, right?
Well, we got kind of, you know, in the past, kind of I have to kind of toe the line and follow whatever the governor says, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But what I'd like to see is someone that doesn't toe the line of any special interest group. We need someone who can.
I've got a couple jaded reporters in the room with me. I think probably
I didn't say it.
No, I've been talking to a lot of legislators. I do a lot of advocacy, and I can tell you, it is very frustrating, you know, as a public health advocate in this state, to see someone who's not trained specifically in public health. You know, I would just, you know, those of us that work in this field, we're definitely going to keep our, our guard up and, of course, give him a chance. But, gosh, I'm very disappointed.
Well, Mary, thanks for calling us and talking about it.
Well, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I hate to switch subjects to the Ohio State Marching Band, but I did want to take everybody's temperature on that and find out, you know, we've already suggested that it might have somewhat eclipsed, at least locally, the news of Ed Fitzgerald's problems in his candidacy for governor. Laura Bischoff, what else do we get from the news of the marching band problem?
Well, I think that first off, I don't think the university is going to give him his job back. I think that a lot of the work that he and his attorney are doing right now in terms of making the public aware of the deficiencies that they see in the investigation, in the report, and in the manner in which he was dismissed are designed to put pressure on the university to maybe write a big check to make him go away. And if the check isn't big enough, then I think that John Waters will sue the university for wrongful dismissal or discharge or firing, mm-hmm. or whatever you call it, and he'll try to win a bigger settlement. I do think that the guy's a very talented band director. Just looking at what he did with the halftime shows last season, it was really phenomenal, mm-hmm. and I think he'll land another top tier job elsewhere.
And I think the key thing here is Title IX violations. That's what the university is looking at.
Meaning Title IX violations, Title IX being the...
The gender equity, the federal rule that goes to address sexual assault and harassment and those things on campus. Mm-hmm. And the thing that glares to me is there was a reported sexual assault. And if you have a reported sexual assault, then if once you know about it as a coach or an administrator or whoever you are, you have to take that further up. It has to be investigated. It has to be looked at.
There are rules you have to follow.
There are certain protocol. And what we haven't seen is we haven't seen John Waters come forward with an email to someone higher up saying, we have this issue here. It's he said, he said. We see nothing as far as concrete evidence that there was anything happening there. Now, if John Waters is able to come forward with an email that shows that he took this to a higher up and that it, you know, someone above him ignored it, that's a different situation. But right now, everyone's coming out and talking about all these salacious things that were in the university's investigation, mm-hmm. which might prop up the claims that the university is making. But the real big, you know, elephant in the room is this Title IX violation. And unless John Waters can address that, that's the key point in him getting his job back or doing anything. And by the way, I don't think he'll get his job back. That's just my guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I used to work. I worked for the University of Michigan in 2012, and I just know from having worked there, and from I have a master's degree in higher ed administration.
Good heavens! How did you end up doing this? It's a long story.
That was a little detour I took in my life, but I'm a very happy reporter here. So, I just having that background, you know, if you work for a university, that if you see anything like this, it's not like you're working with your band over the course of years and talking to people here and there to try to make it better. You call the general counsel's office right away. Mm. And that is drilled into everyone's head. And you know that.
But there was so much other stuff going on. I mean, you wonder, if he couldn't see the forest for the trees.
It's possible. But all of those things create an environment. This is not just about single incidents. I mean, the guidelines that we get from the federal government in the Dear Colleague letters and things like that, mm-hmm. is they're about an environment that encourages development. And if there's an environment of sexual harassment on some level, even if individual people who are in that environment can't see it, we're trying to create environments where students can develop. And none of this is acceptable on that level, and the university can be liable for any of those things. So, you know.
Well, we'll be talking with John Waters tomorrow at 10 a.m. if all of our listeners and everyone else would like to join us for that. Appreciate it. John Waters will be on the show tomorrow. In the meantime, I want to say thanks to Chrissy Thompson, State House Capitol Reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And also Joe Ingles, correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Joe, thanks as always.
Always great to be here.
And Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, thanks for pinch hitting for us today. We really appreciate it.
No problem, and I'm glad you're back from vacation, Ann.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back, everybody. So thanks for having me, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.